according to significant dates on your lunar or solar calendars. It's a moment of reflection you'll carry with you throughout the day. Next, tune in for another captivating segment from our very own Iran Radio's productions. Following that, it's time for Let's Recite the Quran. This program draws you closer to the Holy Book, guiding you through eloquent recitation at level 2. We'll explore tajweed points through a compare and match method, applying them to the beautiful verses of the final surahs of the Holy Quran. Today's special will be back later, so stick around.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Salam to dear brother, dear sister, in faith and humanity. So welcome, you are listening to today's special from IRIB English Radio, which in this program we're going to speak about turning setbacks into success. So be with us. But first, as the ritual of this program, we'll look at the calendar. Today is Saturday, 20th of the month of Rabiul Awwal, 1447 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 22nd of the month of Shahrivar, 1404 of the solar calendar, and the 13th of September, 2025 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Let's start with the Holy Quran. For today, we'll listen to verse 7 of chapter Asra.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. In ahsantum ahsantum li anfusikum wa in asa'tum falaha. فَإِذَا جَاءَ وَعْدُ الْآخِرَةِ لِيَسُوءُوا وُجُوهَكُمْ وَلِيَدْخُلُوا الْمَسْجِدَ كَمَا دَخَلُوهُ أَوَّلَ مَرَّةٍ وَلِيُتَبِّرُوا مَا عَلَوْا تَتْبِيرًا.
And said, if you do good, you do good for yourselves. And if you do evil, you do it to yourselves. Then when the final promise came, we sent your enemies to sadden your faces and to enter the temple in Jerusalem, as they entered it the first time, and to destroy what they had taken over with total destruction.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
This is a general and everlasting rule that all good and evil will eventually return to one's own self. However, it is with deep regret that neither the punishment of Allah may awaken you nor this favor and renewed divine grace, for you turn to rebellion once again, following the path of tyranny, oppression, and violation, inciting a grave corruption on the earth and exceeding the limits in arrogance and self-superiority.
to teach us the words of Allah. Mercy and kindness and hope for everyone. Peace be upon you, O Muhammad.
As I told you at the beginning of this episode of today's special, we're going to speak about turning setbacks into success. Embracing failure can seem counterintuitive, especially in a society that often places a high value on perfection and success. However, failure is a natural and inevitable part of life, and it can actually be a valuable opportunity for learning and growth. When we embrace failure and view it as a temporary setback rather than a personal defeat, we open ourselves up to new possibilities and perspectives. By seeking feedback and learning from our mistakes, we can turn failure into success and build resilience in the face of future challenges. It's important to remember that failure is a normal and necessary part of the journey towards success. And adopting a growth mindset can help us to see each failure as an opportunity to improve and move forward.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum and welcome to today's special. This is Ali, your host. Today we are going to talk about how to turn failure into success. It means, if we want to interpret or translate it into another word, it means that how can we change the threats into opportunities, right? So we can take some lessons from the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. What happens when we rely on God? This is a first question that we want to ask ourselves with. Life is fraught with difficulties and stress. Nothing seems to go the way we planned, and obstacles spring up no matter how well we thought out our steps to success. One of the biggest mistakes we make is that to not take advice. Believe it or not, others have been there and found ways to navigate the road to success, whether the road is in this world or in the hereafter. Brendan Burcher, the motivated speaker and author, offers us several ways to turn failure into success and defeat into motivation. His ideas are based around the fact that people, no matter what their circumstances, need to be grateful and need to give back to the world through service. Almost 1500 years ago, another man taught something very similar, and we can use Burchard's motivational words to ponder the advice we were given by this man, Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam.
Reflecting on different Islamic topics, short commentary of the Holy Quran, hadiths of the infallibles, lessons from the life of the infallibles, all in today's special from IRIB English Radio.
Now let's look at the benefits of failure in this episode of today's special. The one quality that differentiates those who succeed from those who don't is the mental strength and fearless ability to persevere. Whatever the outcome, using failure to your advantage requires mental strength, and experiencing failure helps build this quality. Bouncing back from failure makes you stronger and more resilient to future failures. The more times you are unsuccessful will help you develop the ability to bounce back quickly and find new solutions to make your next attempt successful. Your create an inner resolve tenacity and a fearless determination to not fail again. This is probably one of the most important benefits of failure.
Life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you to doubt you would be the worst mistake? Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. You are the light, you guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you.
Now, ways to turning failure into success. That one of the ways is giving up or try again. Did you really want it in the first place? Is it because we failed that we decided to change our goals? However, if you really don't have a reason on why you want to succeed, then failure will be catastrophic. At times, you just need to avoid it if you are not sure you really want to go into it in the first place. On the other hand, if you have a strong enough reason to succeed, then failure won't be an obstacle. You will be able to overcome anything that comes your way. This means you are supposed to come up with a good reason for succeeding in something. This is the first step in overcoming failure in what you do. With that belief, you will always have to try again, because failure to you will just be feedback.
Don't think that if you want to be a successful Muslim, you isolate yourself. Islam does not believe in isolation, and that you go and you become monks or isolate yourselves in your homes. No. Islam, half of it is theoretical knowledge at the theoretical level. Half of it is implementing that knowledge in society. So if you have that knowledge, but you lock yourself up in a room and you don't go out there in society every single day, deal with people, then you're not worshiping God the way He wants you. If you isolate yourself, you have failed to understand Islam. Because Islam wants you to be active in your community. That's part of Islam. Do business with people, deal with people, help people, have social relations. That's the biggest challenge, really. The most successful person is the one who maintains positive social relations with people, yet observes the boundaries of Allah. This person is the greatest worshiper in the eyes of God. Not the person who locks himself up in his house and worships God. That's not a big achievement. Anybody could do that, stay home and worship God. The real achievement is to go out there in society, in the workplace, and observe the laws of God. That's tough. But that's the highest form of worship. The imam is not saying this person is going to hell and Allah will not accept for him. No, no, no. But that's the lowest type of faith. You want the higher types of faith? You want to really understand Islam? Go out there in society. Be active in society. Yet observe the laws of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and be positive with all people.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. Inshallah, we'll meet you soon. Till then, fi amanillah.
They told me that I'm crazy.
show me all kind of lies. My eyes were locked, yes, I was mesmerized. But deep inside, I know that there's a better world. 'Cause I'm a believer. As I pass, hoping to absorb his light into my heart. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Tears in me, forgive me. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, the light of this blessed city. My head prostrates onto the ground. All is calm. Now I feel at peace. Sound amongst these millions, only I can hear my heart beat. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Are packed, yet I can't leave. I yearn the streets of my Rasul. He is my love, please let me be. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brother, dear sister, salam and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day, where we let the light of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam guide us inward. I'm your host, Danish. Today we bring you a profound reality check from Imam Hussein alayhi as-salam. A man once told him, "I am one of your Shia." And the Imam replied, "Not with flattery, but with deep truth. Fear Allah and don't claim something that Allah may call you a liar for. Our true Shia are those whose hearts are free from deception, hatred, and corruption. Say instead, 'I am one of your supporters and lovers.'" So, as you can see, this sentence, this hadith, tells us a lot, especially in this world today, where you can find many people, some governments who claim to be Shia, but in action, they're not, according to this hadith. The word Shia isn't just a title, it's a responsibility. Imam Hussein alayhi salam is warning us, don't let your words outrun your reality. Don't claim proximity without purification. It's like someone calling themselves a doctor after reading one biology book, or someone saying, "I'm a soldier but never entering the battlefield." Titles without truth become lies. The Imam isn't pushing the man away. He's pulling him closer to honesty. He's saying, you don't need to pretend. Just be real. Start with love. Start with loyalty. Imam Hussein alayhi salam defines the true Shia, those whose hearts are free from ghish, deceit, and ghil, hatred, and daghal, corruption, and like cheating, deceiving people. These are inner diseases. You could look religious on the outside, but if your heart is bitter, envious, or fake, you're not there yet. And studies in psychology show that chronic resentment and hidden jealousy, for example, not only damage relationships, they lead to anxiety, heart problems, and depression. When people train themselves to be transparent, to forgive, and to speak truth, even when it's hard, even when it's kind of like against their own interests, they report higher well-being and stronger trust in others. So, Islamic spirituality always starts inside. That's why the Quran repeatedly says, on the Day of Judgment, nothing will benefit except a sound heart. Inshallah, we, you and I, all of us have it. And get closer to Ahlul Bayt and to being a true Shia of them. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to Women of Resistance. Basima Ahmad Abdul Rahman Sadur is Syrian, but moved to Gaza when she got married to a Palestinian. Women of Gaza, she says, are incredibly strong and resilient, but are suffering tremendously as the genocide takes the turn for the worse. Biting hunger, loss of children, and constant bombings are taking a toll on a population that is facing complete occupation and being fully erased. Here is more of Basima.
Gaza had always been a beacon for the other regions of the Muslim Ummah. When the situation became unstable in Syria, our next brave voice relocated to the coastal enclave of Gaza. Life really isn't that different whether you're in Gaza or Aleppo. People enjoy the small joys and try to carve out a life for their loved ones. Whether the oppressive power is the Israeli occupation army or ISIS, it's ultimately the most vulnerable who suffer. Education is always the answer, no matter the question. But Basima's tragic personal loss made her own journey into formal learning a shorter one. No one should have to endure what the people of Gaza have been subjected to for nearly 2 years. In the blink of an eye, life for Palestinians and those who had chosen to make Palestine their home changed. The idea of turning tail and giving up Gaza forever is not something that sits well with its people. The strength of Palestinian women has been a sight to behold, to the point where someone who has suffered alongside them recognizes there is a deep steadfastness that refuses to be broken. The current crisis has driven those lucky enough to have escaped the specter of death thus far to the very brink. The lack of support from fellow Arab leaders has been particularly hard to bear. Basma is suffering a double loss. First, of being away from her family home after watching the new home she worked so hard to build destroyed around her. The people living under a genocide need the support of the world more than ever. It's high time Palestine's regional neighbors did more. The moments for carefully chosen words of condemnation towards Tel Aviv have passed. Basma's very life depends on it.
Joining me in the studio today to discuss Basima's story is Dr. Rehana Ali, NHS doctor specializing in neurology, a former parliamentary candidate and a pro-Palestinian activist. Welcome, Dr. Rehana. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me.
Dr. Rehana, as you heard Basima's story, you know, what were your initial thoughts?
I think the story is heartbreaking, you know, and it's one of many in Gaza. The fact that, you know, suddenly their lives were changed overnight from... And let's remember that their lives were not easy in the first place. I mean, Gaza had been under a 17-year illegal siege, and therefore the conditions were already pretty horrific. I mean, some people might not be aware that the Israelis had actually planned starvation plus diets for Gazans, so they would actually calculate the number of calories that needed to come in. So when you hear, and then obviously these conditions massively intensified, and over the last few months, there's been a complete siege, humanitarian siege, with practically no food getting in. So when you realise that, you know, babies are being starved to death, I mean, these stories are traumatic to hear, let alone to endure.
Absolutely. Now, you know, Masima says she's Syrian, and, you know, she's now living in Gaza because she got married over there. But she's appealing to her Syrian president and to other Muslim countries who so far have literally just been useless. Is this just a futile appeal from her?
It feels very futile because, first of all, with regards to the Syrian president, you know, Jilani, first of all, he's given way on so many aspects within Syria. And, you know, whilst I know that, you know, in the Sunni world, many have said, oh, well, things will change. But, you know, we're talking about the southwest of Syria being effectively being occupied now by Israel, in addition to the Golan Heights. Air defences of Syria being completely destroyed. And then on top of that, you've got the rest of the Muslim world. You know, 2 billion people, in effect, as you say, useless, you know, totally useless. And I think in some ways that demonstrates, you know, the problem within the Muslim world. It hasn't recovered because it almost has become very apathetic, that actually everyone is waiting for the governments of those Muslim countries, and those governments are occupied. So the people are going to have to realise that actually we have a duty. It's a Muslim duty, actually, to liberate al-Quds. And I think, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, people will actually see that it's possible that Al-Aqsa Mosque could be destroyed. They need to rise to that. You cannot wait for your government. And if your government's not doing it, then perhaps they need to be overthrown.
Now, Dr. Rehana, you know, the other interesting thing is Basima talks about the fact that the Palestinians who left Palestine earlier, you know, during the Nakba and in other times, that she says they've made a big mistake because they can't come back now. But she insists that even though we know that Israel has decided to occupy, they're going to occupy Gaza, and she says Gazans shouldn't leave and they won't leave because this was a mistake. What do you think will happen? I mean, if these forces come in and Gazans are not leaving, what's going to happen?
I think it's moving to an all or nothing response. So, you know, in the past, people have always talked about compromise because that's what the two-state solution was. It was a compromise. We have lost, you know, over 80% of our land, will accept Gaza, will accept West Bank. And actually, it's always been very clear the Israelis have no intention of honouring even that two-state solution. So it's Israel that's the bad partner for peace. And I think many Gazans, you know, and it's very, you know, poignant that they always carry that key of their homes, that they were going to return, and they can't return. And, you know, they feel that they don't want to be refugees. You know, there's refugees in Lebanon, there's refugees in Jordan. They've been refugees for, you know, practically their entire, you know, entire lives. There's, you know, 80, 90-year-olds basically waiting to go home. So I think it's moved, and that's why the resistance was popular. That's why, you know, Hamas was popular in Gaza, because Hamas offered an alternative to basically a stalemate. Because let's be very clear about what October the 7th was. It was breaking of that illegal 17-year siege that the international community failed to do anything about.
Absolutely. I mean, let's come back to the issue of, you know, the resistance and in Gaza. Dr. Rehana, this is also the fact that, you know, these people by now in these 2 years, what they have faced, you know, constant displacements. I mean, the hunger, the loss of children, you know, husbands, wives. Do you think they've just come to a point whereby they have nothing more to lose and therefore they're just going to stay?
I think there's an element of that. I think, you know, you have to admire the resilience. And I think it's, again, it comes back to that all or nothing. They have lost before. They've compromised before. They've been subjected to the most atrocious bombing, you know, complete devastation, loss. You know, we're talking, you know, scores of family members killed. And now starvation. And there's a decision point. Do you say we give up, we give up our land that's rightfully ours, or do you continue to fight? Because I think that, you know, the Israelis are deluded If they think that, you know, Gaza is theirs, it will never be theirs.
And this is something we hear from the women, you know, every week when we speak to them, that they will never give up. They, you know, they say even if there's one of us left and there's breath in our bodies, we will never give up. But also, you know, Basima talks about our role, Dr. Rehana, and she says, you know, please don't stop talking about us. Please, you know, fight for us, help us. We are trying, Dr. Rehana. We don't see much change, although there is a change. But there's also a price to pray for that. I mean, you've experienced it firsthand. Tell us what happened with you.
Yeah, so the first thing I would say is that, yes, I paid a price, but I always reminded myself that I wasn't in Gaza. I wasn't being bombed. My family members weren't being slaughtered. And I have always, you know, supported the Palestinian cause. You know, I'm Kashmiri by background, so, you know, we have a commonality in terms of our occupation, you know, with the Palestinians. And it's always been a cause, you know, that's was very close to my brother's heart, who was assassinated in March 2022. So it was a no-brainer to speak up for Palestine, particularly when, you know, as I called it, the Holocaust, started, because they had moved from mowing the lawn to, you know, complete out mass slaughter. And I was attacked by a number of lobby groups. I think I've got a record in the number of lobby groups that have attacked me. And initially, the General Medical Council dismissed them, saying they didn't meet the threshold. But obviously, with Wes Streeting, there's a new health secretary in July 2024, you know, he put pressure on the General Medical Council to take a different approach. So on my fourth complaint to the General Medical Council, they moved forward, not just from the investigation, but they suspended me before an investigation. So it got to the point where it's obviously a long story, but I took the GMC to the court in July. I'm still waiting for a judgment that was due 4 weeks ago. But in addition to that, I had my review in, you know, 6 months, because it's a legal requirement to have a review of that suspension, which I was given for 18 months, which is unheard of for freedom of speech. Bearing in mind, I've never said anything unlawful or illegal in this country. And my suspension was revoked. And I think that caused a lot of surprise amongst many people, because one thing I hadn't done was I hadn't backed down from what I had said. Mm-hmm. Because even though I had not been allowed to work for 7 months with no income whatsoever, there was obviously financial pressure. But my view is that, you know, the cause is actually greater than our individual hardships. And we have to pay that price.
Absolutely.
It's a small price.
Yeah, and I mean, you are a consultant, you know, working for an NHS. If someone like you can suffer that, then you can imagine, you know, what ordinary people can. But Dr. Rehana, you know, do you feel like there is any change? I mean, we all are trying in Western countries. And when I speak to women in Gaza, you know, I feel very upset. And I say to them, we are trying, but I know we are not succeeding in making it stop, because for them it's now and then and dying and starving. Do you see any change? Do you think, for example, you know, you are a member of parliament, that there is a difference, there is hope in the next, in the elections? Or do you see a change? Do you think that something is changing around the world?
I think something is changing, but, you know, I'm not here for the popularity stakes, so I tend to speak as I see fit. And that, I know, causes, you know, people discomfort, because I tend to be blunt. But, you know, the change has been slow, right? The change, you know, what we're talking about now should have been something we were discussing a year and a half ago. And people were objecting to the use of the word Holocaust, when literally that's the case. People were objecting to saying, well, you know, my situation was, why was there such mass slaughter? Why were they targeting children? Why were they slapping kids in the head? What was it due to? Was it just because they were evil people, or did it arise from somewhere? And we know, and everyone knows, but people are afraid to say Zionism is Jewish supremacy, that there's extremism within Judaism, as there can be extremism within other faiths, but it's one extremism people didn't want to discuss. They were more comfortable saying that it's a political ideology, and yet in the Old Testament and in the Talmud, it talks very clearly that, you know, Jews are human beings and the rest of you are animals or cattle. And that extremism, that extremist element, that has to be dealt with. And people are afraid to speak. And so when you talk about the Palestinian woman and are we doing everything, I would say every single one of us, and that includes myself, are not doing enough.
Absolutely. And of course, if we were doing enough, you know, we would see a situation change in Palestine. Thank you so much, Dr. Rehana. A lot to unpick there. Hopefully, we'll have another session to do that. But, you know, hope is something we can hold on to, and fight must continue. Thank you so much. And we leave you now with The Sounds of Palestine by the artist Saif. Goodbye.
حسبك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
ودعوتك ربي بقرآن جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفران يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآن.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May the peace and blessings of Allah be upon the soul of Prophet Muhammad and his purified progeny. Dear audience, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of the program, Let's Recite the Quran. I'm your host, Mahdi, and we are joined by Quran expert, dear brother Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum assalam, brother Mahdi. And Assalamu alaikum to the dear listeners of this program. I'm very happy to be with you.
Thank you, brother. Well, dear audience, as you may know, the program Let's Recite the Quran consists of several Quranic parts. First, we are going to listen to a recitation recited by a famous reciter of the Noble Quran. After it, Brother Muhammad will analyze that recitation. And at the end, we are going to talk about the music of the Noble Quran. Please stay tuned.
كتاب الله كتاب الله كتاب الله.
Today in the first part of the program, we are going to listen to the recitation of Surah Al-Furqan, verses 58 to 62, recited by Brother Hassan Rezaian. Dear audience, let's enjoy it.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. وتوكل على الحي الذي لا يموت وسبح بحمده وكفى به بذنوب عباده خبيرا الذي خلق السماء
الرحمن
Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, you're still listening to the program Let's Recite the Quran, coming to you from the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And what you just listened to was recitation of Suratul Furqan, verses 58 to 62, recited by Brother Hassan Rezaian. And now, Brother Muhammad, let's talk about this beautiful recitation.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As you have probably noticed, Brother Hassan Rezaian is a follower of the style of Sheikh Abdul Basit Muhammad Abdul Samad. It's very obvious. And he does a very good job at following the style of Sheikh Abdul Basit. He has the voice, and he uses the maqamat very similar to Sheikh Abdul Basit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He has a golden voice.
He has a really good voice. Of course, it's not exactly like Abdul Basit.
Sure.
There is a difference. Abdul Basit, he has this special voice. Even his imitators, no matter how good they imitate him, they still don't have that voice of Abdul Basit. You could still tell that this is not Abdul Basit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because of the nature of Abdul Basit's voice, the texture of his voice. And this was in the Maqamat. First, it was in Bayati from the beginning, from verse 58 to verse 60 was in Bayati. From 61 to 62, it was Hijaz. And Sheikh Abdul Basit, he uses these two maqams a lot in his recitations.
Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about Tajweed.
Now the Tajweed, yes. In verse 59, we have the word Khalaqa.
Khalaqa.
Yes. We have one letter of istirla, followed by one letter of istifal, followed by another letter of istirla. So there is one tarqiq in the middle and two tafkhims at the beginning and at the end. Okay? So we have to make sure that the lam is not pronounced with tafkhim because it's easier to do that. Khalaqa. You could say khalaqa, but you should say khalaqa. Khalaqa.
Khalaqa.
Exactly.
And what helps us?
Is the lips, mm-hmm. the shape of the lips. Remember, when you want to pronounce a fatha with tarqiq, the mouth opens horizontally.
Mm-hmm.
When you want to pronounce a fatha with tafkhim, it opens vertically.
Khalaqa.
Okay. Kha. Kha-la-qa. As mm-hmm. you can see, for the la, the lips spread and they open horizontally. So just keep this in mind and try to practice this in words such as khalaqa and other words that have, you know, one letter of tarqiq in the middle, in between two letters of tafkhim, or vice versa. If there is, for example, two letters of istifal, and in between there is one letter of tafkhim. If we have such an instance in the Quran, you can practice with those words. And okay, in verse ayyam, in the same verse, verse 59, we have fi sittati ayyamin thumma. This is a rule of nun sakina.
Yes,
it is known as ikhfa of nun sakina.
Because we have a tanween here, actually.
Yes, we have a tanween. But remember, tanween is a short vowel plus a nun sakina. And it always comes at the end of a word mm-hmm. as the last letter. The last letter of each word can have a tanween. Okay.
Yes.
And we have three kinds of tanween. Tanween of fatha, tanween of kasra, and tanween of dhamma. And in un. It doesn't matter what kind of tanween you have. If you have a tanween, automatically there is a rule of nun sakina, mm-hmm. just like a nun sakina.
Yes.
So you have to see what the letter after the tanween is. If the letter is, like here, a tha, you have to
apply ikhfa.
Apply ikhfa. And how you apply the ikhfa is important. It varies. You know,
could you tell us in brief, brother?
Okay, the letters of ikhfa, they are what remains other than the letters of idgham, ighlab, and ilhaq.
And the way to apply it?
You have to approximate the place of articulation of that letter of ikhfa. Approximation means making something get close to something else.
That's right.
Right?
So we have to ignore noon.
We ignore noon, yes. Yeah. That's, we have
forget
to
about the
first.
Place of articulation of noon.
We straight up go and see what the place of articulation of the letter is. And we make the articulators get really close to that place of articulation. For example, fa is the tip of the tongue and the front teeth. It's a, what is it? Epicodental consonant, yes. Right? So you have to bring the tongue close to this place of articulation. It's like you're about to pronounce the fa, but you don't.
And you keep making a nasal
sound.
And you
keep this, yeah, you keep this position of the tongue for two vowel counts.
To make a nasal sound.
And nasally, yes, that's important. And of course, the result is both a nasal sound and an oral sound.
Yeah, an oral nasal sound.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad, and thank you, dear audience of IRIB English Radio. You're still listening to the program, Let's Recite the Quran. Stay tuned. Dear audience, now in this part, Brother Muhammad is going to talk about the music of the Holy Quran. And by music, we mean the order, harmony, and beauty of the verses of the Noble Quran. Brother Muhammad, at your service.
Yes, okay. When we say the music of the Quran, we mean that we have two kinds of music. We have an internal music and an external music.
Yeah, about which we talked about before.
By the external music, we mean just the way that the verses are ordered, the order of the verses